afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host today, Dave Allen, bringing you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. It's Friday, September 28th, 2018. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hey, happy Friday, Melody.
Oh, yes, I am looking forward to it. It's been a hectic day. Everyone is taking advantage of the all the specials that our U.S. government gave us with pushing the prices of gold and silver lower. So everyone's taking advantages of those specials, and of course the low prices here at Discount Gold and Silver. So, ladies and gentlemen, these are low prices. Remember, buy low, sell high. What is high in your portfolio and what is low? So that should give me an idea where you need to be and what you have to do. And who you have to do it with is Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. And Dave.
Melody.
Hey, gold was up a little bit today. Had a nice little bump to the upside while everyone is focused to the circus in D.C., gold managed to squeak out $9.30, and we're up at $1,192.70, almost $1,193. Silver had a nice day today, up almost 2.63%. Yeah, up 38 cents at $14.71. Platinum was up $5 at $819. Palladium took a breather today, down 12 at 1,079. No surprise there with palladium. I mean, it was just been on a tear here in the past week or so. And as we're waiting for the final numbers to go through, let's go ahead and let me go back and see if I can. Dave, my computer is frozen and it's not winter. And let me close out some of these things. Let's go to the stock market prices. We have that. The Dow was up 18 points, 26,458. It was turning negative after a larger day in trading. It was, I think it was up almost triple digits earlier today, but we're up 18 now. NASDAQ was up 4 at 8,046. The S&P basically unchanged at 2.913, 2,913. 10-year yield holding 3.06. Let's see. Germany was down big, 1.5%. Japan was up 1.3%. And that emotion driving the market is still down in the 47 area, neutral territory. So big drop, though, from what we've been experiencing as everyone. Well, and with consumer confidence holding stronger, going higher and everything, it is, people are a lot happy. People are out there spending money. Or are they? Or are they, Dave?
I think they're on Amazon.com, Melody.
You think that's where they're at? Well, you know, the U.S. consumer spending, it was speaking of consumer spending. The Commerce Department said today, consumer spending, and we all know, we've said it here a million times, that consumer spending accounts for more than two-thirds of the U.S. economic activity, rose 0.3% last month. The spending last month was driven by outlays on healthcare, which offset a drop in motor vehicle purchases. We touched on it briefly yesterday about the drop in vehicle purchases, but it was only briefly that we talked about it yesterday. So when adjusted for inflation, consumer spending rose 0.2% in August after climbing 0.3% in July.
Yeah, today's report came on the heels of data released yesterday showing a decline in orders for key capital goods in August, namely, vehicles on the one hand, as Melody mentioned, and a further widening of the goods trade deficit. And that prompted economists to downgrade their GDP estimates for the third quarter to as low as 2.8% annually. We know, in August, spending on goods increased 0.3%, as Melody mentioned, likely lifted by higher gasoline prices, while outlays on services advanced 0.4%. again, with spending on healthcare accounting for much of that increase.
You know, we saw a little bit of personal income rose 0.3% after it increased by the same margin in July. You know, you saw wages jump 0.5%, and the saving rate was unchanged at 6.6%. So those were some of the numbers we were given today, Dave. And consumer sentiment, as we talked before.
Hey. Yeah. Hey, it was just under expectations in September, but the index remained near all-time highs. You know, University of Michigan has its monthly survey of consumers. It hit 100.1 in the final reading of September today, slightly below the 100.8 expected from economists. But the sentiment among consumers did rise from August's final reading when sentiment was 96.2.
You know, it really is interesting, though, how so much impact is based on consumer sentiment numbers. We all know fiat currencies is only supported by confidence. That's the only thing. So consumer spending, consumer sentiment, and everything is really, really important. But, you know, the survey only considers 500 consumers' outlook on economic prospects, accounting for sentiment on personal finances, inflation, unemployment, government policies, and interest rates. What do you think that number would be if they expanded the survey? I mean, considering... am I misreading that or something?
No, the number is 500. It does seem, alone, you're talking about 300 million Americans.
Yeah.
But it does test, statistically significant, which is to say essentially that there's a very high degree of confidence that, you know, within a range of, you know, whatever, they're 4%, 6%, 8%, that these numbers are reliable to that extent. So they would tell you, we would be told that, you know, you can increase it to 5,000 or 50,000. They would still expect the readings, the levels to be roughly the same. So it is counterintuitive, but that's sort of the science of statistical analysis, as we're taught in grad school anyway.
Yeah, science. How to lie to the consumer, but anyway. And does it area? I mean, demographics. I mean, certainly if you ask people in the rural area versus, places that are really booming and growing and everything, or is it... do all these people have investments in stock markets versus people who don't? I don't know. It's just...
That's very valid. I mean, I just read an article, and we touched on it briefly on, I believe, Wednesday. There's a big study done about income disparity in China, and I'm sure the numbers are similar here, but the study in China, just more recent, showed that the major cause of the income disparity between, in terms of rich versus poor, was education. And it showed that those who lived in urban areas had a lot more access to education there, and that that education in turn, has manifested itself in higher income levels. It's the same, all over the world, generally speaking, but found it interesting that education was the number one factor in China determining, how well off you were financially.
Very interesting. Also, we've seen the Fed's Treasury. This is something that, I know everyone who's listening, everyone has been focused on what's been going on in D.C. We talked about it yesterday, and I'm done talking about it. And so I want to get back to something that I know, something that I can gather and appreciate a little bit more. But the Fed is they dropped. If everyone remembers that the Fed has been, dropping and selling their and shrinking their portfolio. And we've seen that the value of treasuries dropped to $3.997 trillion as of Wednesday. as the Fed nears rounding out the first year of process of slowly cutting back its holdings. It has been, October of last year that they began shrinking its balance sheet to a more normal but yet unspecified size. Next week, the pace of roll-off from their portfolio will reach $50 billion per month and is going to continue at that rate until the central bank decides its holdings have reached an appropriate amount. And yes, I guess, Dave, we have to say once again that the Federal Reserve raised their rates on Wednesday, as expected. But I was, I'm the only one, I was the contrarian. I didn't think, maybe they wouldn't, considering how everything was. And of course, they left their policy, their monetary policy for the coming year largely unchanged and steady, amid the steady economic growth and a strong job market. They did take out an accommodative out of there, but we all know that if anything happened to the markets, to Wall Street, they'd be right back in there doing what they needed to do to keep everything going.
Yes, ma'am. Gotta look out for those.
Gotta look out for
those banks.
Yeah. Oh, geez. President Trump said the other day he was planning to impose severe economic penalties against Canada if it does not agree to two major changes in its trade policy. Speaking at a news conference, President Trump said again he was planning to effectively terminate NAFTA and impose steep tariffs on all the automotive imports from Canada to the U.S. I heard that he wanted to call it United States, what was it, the USMC, United States, Mexico, Canada, so USMC, kind of a play there, but the White President Trump's comment comes as his relationship with Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau appeared to hit a new low earlier this week. The White House wants Trudeau to agree to changes by this weekend. Talks have stalled over several issues. And, of course, we all know that President Trump accuses the Canadians of ripping off Americans.
Yeah, as the relationship between Trump and Trudeau continues to, worsen, it's unclear what, really is going to mean for both economies or for the trade relationship that, literally connects thousands of companies in both countries. Trump said that Trudeau had sought a meeting with him during the UN General Assembly meeting this week, but Trump said he refused to participate because he did not like how Canada was approaching trade discussions. A spokesman for Trudeau, on the other hand, said that the prime minister never sought a meeting with our president during the New York gathering. The spokesperson declined further comment. Trump and several of his top aides have said Canadians were refusing to rework NAFTA because they really want to continue protecting their local dairy industry through a controversial management program.
I think we talked about this before on the Wisconsin and the big dairy farms up there and the agreements they have with the Canadians and that they basically have stopped purchasing, that I've heard from one of our listeners and clients, to where, they're just dumping the milk, throwing the milk away. So hopefully something gets resolved with this. There's multiple other issues that still remain unresolved. Auto imports is one. And Canadian Prime Minister Trudeau said on Monday he was open to redoing NAFTA, but only if it makes sense for Canadians. And, that's one thing. And kudos to President Trump, because when he's in these UN speeches, he tells these governments that they need to watch out for their own country and for their own citizens. So that's what they're doing, and it's so you can't
careful what you ask for.
So Trudeau is, whether you like him or whether you don't, is beginning to come out and say this, say the same thing that Trump is doing, is we're defending Canada's interests, we're standing up for the Canadians. And but there was a comment from President Trump on Wednesday that he was not expecting any breakthrough in the coming days. We're unhappy with the negotiations and the negotiating style from Canada, Dave.
Yeah, you know, a number of U.S. lawmakers from both parties have asked the White House to, you know, try do their best to make sure Canada remains in the talks. I mean, during trade discussions, Trump has often sought to, or his trade people have sought to create leverage over other countries by threatening tariffs, and that's the approach it looks like he used the other day. You know, when he said he'd impose tariffs on all of Canada's, you know, automobiles and auto part imports. You know, and that obviously could end up hurting U.S. auto companies that make cars in Canada, and as well as those that buy auto parts from north of the border. Remember, I mean, tariffs are paid by importers of products and not foreign countries. You know, and U.S. business execs have said they'll probably be forced to pass those costs on to consumers. So we'll say, I mean, Trump doesn't seem to be fazed by that rhetoric. You know, he says, hey, if Canada doesn't make a deal with us, we're going to make a much better deal. And we're going to put billions and billions of dollars into our treasury. You know, the plot thickens.
The plot does. And again, billions and billions is better than no billions. But then again, in today's world where we live in, you know, trillions and trillions of deficits and debt, billions is pennies. We'll take them. We'll take them. If I'm walking down the street and see a penny on the road, I do pick it up. I still pick it up, whether it be a penny or a dime or even a quarter. I still bend over and pick them up. It's still spendable. And
I'm beginning to see maybe it's more and more of a contributing factor to my lower back problems. You know, picking up all those pennies over the years.
Although I am beginning to debate whether I will or anymore, because it's everything can seem so dirty anymore.
Oh, I know.
It might be healthy to pick it up anymore.
Gosh, you know, when you're, you know, going to some drive-through on rare occasion, you know, and you tell the poor person who's taking your money, I'm sorry, I got dirty car chains to give you. You know, it's sort of, ugh, you know, I'd certainly be grossed out on the other end.
Hey, we only have a few more minutes before we head into the break. And I don't know, I saw this headline and this is the first time I'm looking at it, so I'm not even sure where it's from. It's from Chron, Chron. This is updated, but drinking Dr. Pepper and smoking cigars, centenarians share their secrets to living past 100.
Wow.
How about that? The secret for staying young and living long is drinking 3 Miller High Life each day, along with a drink of Johnny Walker Red.
Here, here.
We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CommonSenseVoicesOfIntegrity.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, a show of Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and I'm here with my co-host today, Dave Allen. And you can visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter, and of course, you can listen to these programs. They're archived on a long-term basis, and of course, you can listen to the program live every day at 4 p.m. Eastern time. Just go to the website. And I am so happy it's Friday. It's been a hectic and long week, a very stressful week, a lot of stressful news floating around out there. And, you know, when you read it and, you know, 24/7 and follow it, it does have a tendency to get to you every now and then. But that's why I brought up about the longevity. And before we move on, and to talk about insiders are selling stocks at the fastest pace, here's another man. He's 112, considered to be the oldest man in America. Richard Overton is the oldest living U.S. military veteran, and he lives in Austin. And his sage advice, well, he told reporters he smokes up to 18 cigars a day. I don't know how anybody can smoke 18 cigars a day, Dave.
See, you gotta calculate that. I mean, it figures it's like, I mean, if they're a regular size cigar, it's got to be like 30 minutes, minimum to get through a nice size stogie.
And his favorite foods is catfish, gravy, mac and cheese. And there's another woman, another Texan. So maybe it's just living in Texas that makes you to live over 100 years old. And her claim to fame was Dr. Pepper that fueled her longevity. So their doctors kept telling them, you're going to die, but they live and the doctors die. So anyway, there's a lot of things that are starting to happen that we haven't seen since the last recession. You know, we're talking about home sellers in the U.S. are cutting their prices at the fastest pace in the last 8 years. We've also learned that corporate insiders are selling stocks at the most rapid pace in 10 years. So the question is, why are they dumping their shares so quickly? Do they know something that the rest of us don't know? Certainly nobody can blame them for taking advantage of the ridiculously high stock prices that we're seeing in the marketplace right now. But stocks have been very high for a while. So why is there such a mad rush for the exits all of a sudden? Corporate insiders have sold about $5.7 billion worth of stock so far this month.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really eye-opening number. I mean, CEOs are apparently using the market boom to quietly cash in their own chips. You know, insiders at U.S. companies, you know, dumping, I mean, close to $6 billion. I mean, that's the highest in any September over the past 10 years. It's not a new trend necessarily. I mean, insiders, which technically include corporate officers and directors, sold shares in August at the fastest pace in 10 years as well. It'd be one thing if September was an anomaly, but the fact that insider shares are being, you know, sold so fast in August as well indicates this is a trend. I mean, could it be possible that these corporate insiders believe the market's about to tumble? Of course, it doesn't exactly take insider information to see the writing on the wall, but that's another story, Melody.
Well, you know, they're expecting another rate increase in December in 2019. They're looking for at least three rate hikes. And then we're going into 2020. The Fed shows no signs of taking any type of breath in rate hikes. And this is terrible news for stock market investors because, as we reported, every rate hiking program in the history of the Federal Reserve has ended in a stock market crash or recession. In fact, since 1957, there have been 18 rate hiking cycles, and every single one of them has ended in a disaster.
Yeah, so hey, if you're a betting man or woman, do you think we're going to beat the odds this time? You know, after raising rates again on Wednesday, the Fed released a statement that said it expects the U.S. economy to grow for at least three more years, albeit at a rate pretty substantially lower than White House and even some congressional estimates. You know, you can believe whatever you want, obviously, but it's also important to remember that Fed Chair Ben Bernanke, back in the day, just 10 years ago, assured us that a recession was not coming in 2008. Ha ha! Later, we learned that the moment when he made that statement, a recession had actually already begun. So hold on to your hats, friends. Prepare now for the coming financial crisis. You know, on Wall Street, actions speak much louder than words. And it seems that corporate insiders are sending a very loud message by selling so many of their shares.
Yeah, and what they do also, Dave, is they buy back their shares and they pump it up with their, billions of dollars, and then they sell their shares. So people don't have a chance. And it's all going to end in the same way that it always does. And they're going to keep pumping you full of good news, candy, and everything else. But in the long run, even Larry Kudlow, current president's economic advisor, he probably still denies there was any subprime loan issues back in 2008, just like Ben Bernanke assured us that there was no recession. Mm-hmm. Don't expect one. That's what they're going to tell you until the people finally begin to feel it. And, we talk about our housing bubbles that we have. And, I mean, there's bubbles that exist all over the world anymore. That's because the world economies have all been synchronized. And now you've got these housing bubbles that exist all over. And Hong Kong have the most overvalued at the greatest risk of collapse. This was a report that was focused on 20 major cities. And again, Hong Kong, the housing prices in Hong Kong are the most overvalued. UBS Group Global Real Estate Bubble Index puts Munich, Toronto, Vancouver, London, Amsterdam, alongside Hong Kong, as cities currently in property bubble territory. There's a lot of major imbalances that were found in Stockholm, Paris, San Francisco, Frankfurt, Sydney. Los Angeles, Zurich, Tokyo, Geneva, and New York are merely deemed overvalued, while Chicago is the only city included in the list that it is viewed as undervalued. Mm. with every home that you purchase in Chicago, you also get a Glock.
Yeah, right. That's what I was going to say. Boy, I wonder how much the good old murder rate is driving that. Well, this index has identified price bubbles as regularly recurring phenomena in property, defining them as a substantial and sustained mispricing of an asset. Again, Hong Kong identified as the most extreme of those, and it's seen housing prices rise at an annual rate of roughly 10% since 2012. Wow, that's when you compound that. That's got to be 100% over the last, maybe not quite over the last 6 years, but current property cooling measures have failed to rein in prices in the former British colony. There's been some suggestion that tighter restrictions could be coming for non-local home buyers. Wonder to what extent Beijing is, looking over the shoulders there, Melody.
That's true. You know, what I think is interesting, we all know Chicago, their valuations remain low in fair valued and undervalued territory, respectively, with Boston. And I could see, I wouldn't ever think that Boston would be undervalued. But I think maybe you had a lot of people perhaps leave Boston. maybe because of the high taxes.
I'm sorry. It's the Red Sox.
Oh. Okay, that makes a lot of sense. My God.
Sorry, listeners. It's Friday.
Okay, let's just move on then.
Perhaps, yeah. Perhaps your suggestion makes more sense, Melody.
I like the Red Sox better. But anyway, both ideas are good. But it does surprise me. Boston is, in undervalued territory. But let's go ahead and let's talk a little bit about Italy. Can we?
Absolutely.
I love Italy. It's defying the EU. How about that?
Tisk, yeah. Tisk.
Tisk. The two populist parties that are governing in Italy have come out looking victorious after weeks of intense cabinet discussions over their next year's deficit. The leftist Five Star Movement and the right-wing Lega agreed last night on a 2.4% deficit target for 2019. And of course, that is despite opposition for some technocrat members in the government. The new deficit target is actually three times higher than the number that the previous government had planned. The higher public spending could spark negative market reactions, given that Rome holds the second highest debt pile in the Eurozone, totaling 2.3 trillion euros, which is about $2.67 trillion.
Yeah, I mean, Carlton Hesse, who's an economist, European economist, said this morning that his company's not concerned about a near-term financial crisis in Italy, but we're concerned that Italy might face a serious debt crisis when we hit the next recession, which he thinks could be in 2021 or 2022. Now, that 2019 deficit figure could also, is raising problems with the EU. Though that 2.4% target is still below the EU's threshold of 3%, it challenges previous demands from Brussels, the headquarters of the EU, to lower its public debt pile. And there are also some concerns of potential slippages in their budget that would automatically increase the deficit, Melody.
Well, the more medium-term questions around the sustainability of this government would remain, given diverging views among these coalition partners and the rise in support for the Deputy Prime Minister Salvini. And he's the one that leads up the Lega Party. And he has gained public support since the appointment of the government, but mainly because he has a very strong stance on immigration.
Yeah.
So, there was a poll that was released earlier this week by the SWG Institute, which is a market research company in Italy, showed that voters are increasingly supportive of him and its leaders. And the party has risen to 32% of support from 17.4% at the election. And the media reports that both populist parties pressured the finance minister to increase spending in a way that their campaign promises were put forward.
Yeah, what are the next steps over there? The Italian government has to finalize its budget plan for 2019 and send it to the EU by 10/15, October 15th. Brussels will reportedly then issue recommendations by the end of November, and Rome will then have to decide if those recommendations should be added to its budget. Final document, budget document, needs to be approved by the Italian Parliament by the end of the calendar year.
It's always interesting before we go on in Beijing and talk about Beijing and Taiwan. It's always interesting that we saw it with Greece. Now we're seeing it with Italy. I mean, they're carrying the largest debt and they just go on and they do these things like it just doesn't matter, until, something comes out. And the next thing they have banks failing. And I don't know if it was only a year ago that they were putting restrictions on what people could pull from the banks. Their banks were ready to collapse. Everything just gets covered up. What has improved in Italy from a year ago? Nothing. Nothing.
Hopefully it's wine, Melody.
Yes. and we can live to be 105.
There you go. That's right. Well, you know, Melody mentioned Beijing and Taiwan, just staying overseas for now. We're reading that China and Taiwan are vying for the same allies in the, you know, throughout the Pacific Islands. That's through foreign aid and what's called soft power. And that's all happening in a competition that's becoming increasingly crucial to Taipei's, the capital of Taiwan's, foreign relations. You know, a third of Taiwan's allies are based in the Pacific. No surprise there. It's a region rich in natural resources. So maintaining those bonds has become a priority for Taiwanese President Tsai Ing-wen's administration. Yeah, that's especially true as her nation's diplomatic circle has been shrinking as more countries cut off ties in favor of, you know, aligning with China. Taipei now has formal relations with only 17 countries. That's not much, because Beijing opposes countries pursuing relations with the East Asian state.
You know, China claims Taiwan under their policy known as One China. So nations seeking rapport with Beijing are required to cut off diplomatic links with Taipei. The world's largest, second largest economy has spent $1.26 billion to aid to Pacific allies since 2011, according to a Tuesday note from the Lowy Institute, and which is an Australian think tank. Taiwan has spent $224 million on its respective partners. In comparison, on a per capita basis, Taipei appears to have the upper hand. But China increases its engagement in the area, and pundits are wondering who will be the first to jump ship.
Well, you know, since Tsai took power in 2016, five nations have switched allegiances to China. You know, most recently, El Salvador, Burkina Faso, and the Dominican Republic earlier this year. Tsai, who has accused, Xi Jinping, China's president, of poaching allies, recently described the Asian giant's behavior as out of control. You know, even countries without official ties can still incur Beijing's anger, you know, when they appear to be, you know, cuddling up to Taipei. For example, we know just recently, you know, in a strengthening U.S.-Taiwan relations, reflected by arms sales and upgrades to the de facto U.S. embassy in Taipei. That sparked pretty harsh criticism from Xi's administration. And Beijing, is trying to pressure Tsai, who has long refused Beijing's demand that she recognize Taiwan as part of One China.
Well, you know, China's footprint in the Pacific is expanding, and the conflict between our president and China is also expanding. So,
indeed.
Well, we're heading into a break now, ladies and gentlemen. Right back, right after this few short minutes.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com, or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today. today, complete with two Black Berkey Elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. It's Friday. It's been a really long week, but it's always great to be here. And let's go ahead and talk about the U.S. to conduct some military exercises with the Philippines. The Philippine military said its defense and security activities with the U.S., including annual combat exercises, is going to increase next year. As a show of continuing robust relations between the treaty allies. Military spokesman De Toyado, Colonel, said this morning that the top U.S. and Philippine military officials agreed to increase the number of joint security activities next year to 281. There are 261 such joint activities this year, Dave.
Yeah, boy, that seems like an awful lot, especially given some of the corruption issues. Well, it's actually aside from the corruption issues, but increasing, given what's going on with their president, Rodrigo Duterte, it sort of surprises me. I mean, Duterte vowed to end many of the military's combat drills with the U.S., along with the presence of our troops. When he took office 2 years ago, he said, while working to revive ties to China, the joint drills and U.S. military's presence would continue. At the same time, activists said today that the Philippine president acknowledged in a speech that he permitted extrajudicial killings in his brutal drug war. But his aides argued it was a misunderstanding and stressed his repeated denials. That's a pretty significant faux pas, if it's true.
Yeah, very much so. China is beginning to challenge the U.S. in Africa. I know we talk about it on this program. I know I've talked about it with James Corbett about what is happening in Africa. The Horn of Africa has become a strategic linchpin for the U.S. So the fact that China has dramatically escalated its involvement there presents a daunting challenge for our U.S. policymakers. And now we're seeing that this is even more evident in a tiny country of Djibouti.
Djibouti. Djibouti. Sounds like the title of a song.
Yeah. Djibouti.
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 Yeah. Oh, I like that.
We know the song.
Really.
But anyway, Beijing is aggressively expanding its influence there. And when China opened its first overseas military base there last year, of course, Washington took a wait-and-see kind of an approach. The U.S., Japan, France, Italy, they all have bases in the area. So the Chinese military presence was a test case of whether Beijing's military expansion in Africa would be an opportunity for cooperation or a source of potential conflict. A year later, the verdict is increasingly clear. The Chinese military base is only one part of a steady encroachment into Djibouti that now threatens the diplomatic and national security interests of the U.S. and its allies.
Yeah, I mean, earlier this year, the Djibouti government, which is heavily indebted to Beijing, seized control of a container terminal from Dubai-based DP World. And Djibouti's president, we'll call him Ismail, invoked emergency measures to ignore legal rulings in the UK meant to prevent his seizure of the port. The Djibouti governments expect to hand over operations of the port to Chinese state-connected firms, and just in July announced a partnership with one of them to establish a free trade zone in the country. you know, situated along one of the busiest commercial sea lanes in the world, Chinese economic interests, I mean, are clear. I mean, Djibouti stands to be a key, that could play a key role in China's string of pearls strategy, which links key ports to their greater One Belt, One Road initiative. Meanwhile, Beijing's military activities there are of increasing concern. You know, the U.S. base in Djibouti is a key launching pad for anti-terrorism and intelligence operations against the Islamic State, Al-Qaeda, Al-Shabaab, and Boko Haram. Melody.
Well, you know, earlier this year, the U.S. publicly accused China of using these high-grade lasers to repeatedly attack U.S. pilots operating out of that base. And I'm not sure, we did lose some military men in Africa earlier this year, I believe it was. So I'm not sure if it was in this area or not. My memory doesn't serve me there. But so it is increasing conflict there. We had Congress, and that prompted Congress to pass legislation last month that includes language requiring the Pentagon to provide a formal assessment of China's military presence and the threat it poses to the U.S. military. Over the past 5 years, you had Chinese official arms sales to Africa, they increased by 55%. And its share of the African arms market has doubled to 17%, and certainly that surpasses the U.S.
They know a way to a leader's heart. The U.S. government so far apparently seems unwilling or unable to confront this issue. You know, a spokesman for the State Department's Africa Bureau said recently that U.S. policy is not to curtail any other actors' constructive involvement in Africa, but rather to encourage them insofar as their influence supports good governance, rule of law, and anti-corruption efforts.
We've also talked about some ways how wages seem to be growing. We talked about this on Monday's show, where middle-class wages and those for low-wage earners have stagnated. Of course, everyone knows this in the past couple of decades, especially when compared to the share of national income and wealth that's enjoyed by the top 10%. There was a recent analysis by economist Elise Gould that showed that while median pay was unchanged in 2017, low pay, the 10th percentile wage, meaning 90% of workers earn more, rose at a rate of 3.7%. There are at least two explanations for this pattern. First, when the economy sniffles, disadvantaged workers do catch pneumonia. That is, lower paid workers get disproportionately hurt by labor market slack, and vice versa. High earners are far less sensitive to the ups and downs of the business cycle, and low unemployment provides low wage earners that bargaining clout that they lack in slack economies.
Yeah, there is a second explanation, according to Gould, and when I say this, you know, we're not saying that we disagree or disagree with her, because there are obviously strong arguments on both sides of the argument that minimum wage increases, which, you know, according to Gould, is the other explanation. I mean, in some respects, you know, it's, you know, raising the pay of low wage workers ends up, well, raising their pay. But that simple fact usually gets obscured in the debate over whether, you know, the minimum wage should be increased or not. Let's see.
It's not that minimum wage should be raised. It should mean that our prices should be lowered by backing our currency once again, so we don't need to make $100,000 just to survive.
Thank you. That's an excellent perspective.
You know, poverty shouldn't be at the, you know, almost $30,000 level. You know, I mean, I can remember one of my first, when I became an officer at the savings and loan. I mean, I was ecstatic because I was making over $20,000 back in the early 80s.
Woohoo!
I mean, it was woohoo. Now it's poverty level. It's why? Because your dollar, ladies and gentlemen, gets weaker and weaker and weaker.
Yeah.
Didn't mean to interrupt, but.
Oh, no, that's really all I had to say about that, and I'm glad you stepped in with that perspective. Do you want to talk about, we're just getting some breaking news, Melody. We see that, and we mentioned you know, this on the show the other day, but it's now confirmed that the president has signed a spending bill that will avert a government shutdown that would start officially Monday morning. Although he did call it, you know, the measure, the spending bill, ridiculous because it didn't include funding for his wall at the southern border at the U.S. But he did make pledges to keep the government open to his Republican colleagues in both the House and the Senate. And he said that the bill did secure additional funding for border security. Melody, it's being said that Trump has agreed with the House and Senate leaders to, you know, wait until after the midterm elections to push for more spending for construction of a wall.
Yeah, and that's what this is all timed, all for the elections. This is all timed. You know, they got enough to keep the government going, and he's going to come back, and then they're going to have to pass something else in December, because I believe this only funds the government till December. Is that correct?
The day which will live in infamy, December 7th.
Is that kind of interesting timing there, isn't it?
Indeed.
Coincidence or by design?
Oh, I'm sure there's some people in the White House and these congressional staffs that, you know, just they like you know, these subtle, if not, you know, and symbolic moves, you know, like this.
Well, you know, I just want to touch on this. You were talking about Italy, and you know, and ladies and gentlemen, we have to understand that when they raise these deficit targets, you know, it's going to affect their markets. They're basically defying the EU. It's already showing that it's going to rattle their markets, and so again, we're looking for a contagion, possibly, because all of these world markets are always linked together anymore. You know, that's how these world economies have grown, through government and central bank stimulus. So, you know, I think Goldman Sachs sees Italy junk. Their bonds, their bonds is junk, and they're not going to be able to get any capital to further their
growth. Yeah,
growth. Yeah.
Wow.
Thank you. Yeah.
Do we see some oof? I bet you hedge funds are shorting Rome these days.
Yeah, so you know, and then you're going to have these Italian banks. Their shares are going to be hit by the government bond yields, because those are going to have to. So there's all that is involved, and it's just something else from left field that can be flying our way to take our record high stocks and begin them on their projection to a much lower level. So. So I think that I'm glad you brought that, and Dave brought that to the program today. So I think that's important. You know, no one's paying any attention. And everybody says, well, look what happened with Greece. Yeah, well, Greece isn't Italy either. You know, and maybe just Greece was, you know, just the, you know, a test, you know, to see how they could do it and so forth and whatnot. But ask the Greece people how they fared. Yeah, the government didn't collapse, basically. But how did the people fare? They didn't fare very well. They lost. They lost a lot. They lost their homes. They lost their businesses. People had to leave Greece just to survive. Families broke up. But, you know, you don't hear that stuff in the news. You know, you just hear, oh, well, they got more money. Okay. But what happens? You know, it's... And that's what the media fails to provide is the truth about these instances. You know, I saw, Dave, I don't know what you think about this. I saw Nikki Haley. You know, we know they want to replace Maduro in Venezuela. I saw Nikki, and I like Nikki Haley. She's there with a bullhorn. And I'm thinking, when was the last time we saw, the ambassador with the bullhorn talking about Venezuela and replacing Maduro? I mean, is that odd, or have I just...
Oh no, it's it's certainly unusual. See the our top diplomat, taking to the street, so to speak, especially in a highly volatile situation, in which our president has suggested regime change, certainly. A big segment of Venezuelan society calling for new elections and an opportunity to elect someone who can pull them out of their economic and political and corruption funk. I didn't see that. I didn't see Haley. Today was it?
Yesterday, but I believe it was I guess it was yesterday. She took
that old rebel rouser from South Carolina.
I do like her. But anyway, ladies and gentlemen, we're out of time, and we'll be back Monday, Dave and I. Until then, be safe, good night, and God bless. Give us a call, 1-800-375-4188.
Bye-bye.
A single penny left for me. That's too bad.